This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad, and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
This is Houston Huddleston from New Starship, and I'm restoring the Enterprise D bridge, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Tea, Earl Grey, hot.
It's time for another serving of Earl Grey, our dedicated TNG show. I'm Philip Gilfith, sitting in the center chair this week. I'm joined by my co-host, resident blue shirt and xenobiologist, Daniel Prue. Now, Daniel, I hear you've been organizing all the log entries relating to the encounters with the Q entity. Now, are you putting them in the correct order?
Are you asking me if I'm putting them in alphabetical order? Because it's kind of difficult when they just decide to make up titles that don't even follow any sort of rules here. I don't know how to put these in alphabetical order.
Okay, but do you know the chronological order?
No, I don't know any order. I'll just listen. They all have Q in them. That's all I know, and that's all that matters.
Okay, well, Encounter at Farpoint and Tap Crew Street should be easy to put in there.
Don't forget all Q things.
All right, well, I'm also joined by my co-host, sitting at Tactical, Security Chief Darren Moser. Now, Darren, I'm told you're trying to find the right holodeck program for some quality father-daughter time. Any luck so far finding a good program?
No, actually, I went to the holodeck to have it create for me the ideal sitting at Tactical chair. And so I told it, make me a chair. And the thing it just dropped in front of me was not what I would call remotely a chair. So I called Jordy down to look at the holodeck because it must clearly be malfunctioning. It was made out of wood or something primitive. Yeah, it didn't make me think of you. So,
is your daughter having trouble sleeping at night now? Does she hear any sounds at night?
My baby monitor is picking up some weird stuff around 1800. But besides that, no, it's been good.
Okay, and your wife has probably noticed that big glowing circle on the ceiling for, like, the last 5 hours. But anyway, as folks probably can't tell at all from this intro, is today's topic is actually a light-hearted, hopefully, topic. We're going to be talking about the comedic episodes and moments in The Next Generation. Obviously, we have a lot of fun here on Earl Grey, but we're going to focus slowly on when The Next Gen brought the funny, usually on purpose. I think TNG's a pretty heavy show. It's a very serious show, and you could say all the series are like that. I mean, the original series always had its sort of laugh on the bridge ending sometimes, and it had comedic episodes, right? Trouble with Tribbles, the second iMUD.
Trouble and Tribulations.
It definitely had comedic episodes. Yes, that was a half of the TOS episode, yes. I don't know, the other series, to a certain extent, may or may not have had comedic episodes. I don't know, but we're going to talk on TNG. So I have a little list we're gonna go through, and then certainly Daniel and Darren will throw in what they want. But when I made the list, the first thing I was worried about is, well, you know, it's just going to be Q episodes. You know, that was probably all there was. And there wasn't. There's going to be lots more than that. But I think that's where we should begin, with the Q episodes. And to me, the biggest comedic episodes that Q brought us were Deja Q, that's the third season, 13th episode, and Cupid, which was one season later in the fourth season, 20th episode. And to me, Deja Q is, to me, one of the funniest episodes of TNG. This is the one, Daniel, where Q loses his powers, I mean, literally shows up naked on the bridge and says, red alert, and then just one line after another for the next episode. So Daniel, while you're trying to remember which one that is, Darren, what is your sort of, you know, thoughts about that being a comedic episode, and maybe your favorite moments, if any, that really made you laugh in that one?
Well, it's a good episode because they pair Data with Q, so you get the ultimate, like, straight man with, like, no humor and emotion, and Q, who is the, you know, practical jokester trickster. And yeah, it's a fun episode. You get a lot of, you know, great, it's like, you could almost see it as a children's story of, you know, how the Q learned its lesson. You know, Q went on the bridge of the Q went on the bridge of the Enterprise, and boy, was Picard not happy to see him. But no, it's a fun episode. You get the great, I mean, he just interacts with all these great characters. Worf's all like, die. And Guinan, you know, stabs him with the fork. And, you know, it's just, it's all these great kind of what everyone wanted to do when Q shows up, because he's just such a pain. And it's a fun, fun episode. The only thing I don't like about it is almost the title, because Deja Q, which I'm assuming is obviously a play off of the word deja vu, I don't see how that has anything to do with the one where Q loses his power. So it's always hard for me to remember what this one's about.
Oh, there was a glitch, I think, in the Matrix.
So it was referencing Matrix, so, yeah. Which would come out in 1990, what?
1999.
Time is near the continuum.
We've all been the Scarecrow, okay?
We've all been the Scarecrow. Big deal.
To the journey!
Well, I think one of my favorite tracking shots, if I'm using that word correctly, is Q in the turbo lift, which apparently is the size of my room. As he walks to Worf, he's like listing all the things he'll have to do now that he's human, like say nothing of being ticklish, of sneezing, having to wear clothes, to bathe. Too bad. What about you, Daniel?
What a great episode that is. And, you know, just seeing Q go like, what is wrong with my stomach? I don't, this weird pain that's going on. I don't understand. Like, you know, it's fish out of water humor. Star Trek does it really well, and it's a lot of fun. And especially, you know, season 3, we've gotten to know Q well enough to be like, haha, you're getting your comeuppance at this point now. How do you like it, you know? And he's got back pains and all of these other things. And it's such a fun, you know.
Hey,
the thing is,
he's under stress, problems with the family.
Exactly. Even in his most serious episodes, well, most of his most serious episodes, there's always at least a few good, you know, one-liners at least, because Q brings the funny every time he's
around.
Now,
is this the third Q episode we've seen him in?
It is.
So we had Encounter Farpoint, and then...
Well, this was his fourth, wasn't it?
No. This is the third. It's Encounter, then you have Hide and Q.
That's right, where he kills everyone.
You're right. Q who? You're right.
I would never have been able to tell you the title of that episode, but I knew that it was there.
The Bulg. Yes.
The fun episode where Q introduces the Federation to its mortal enemy.
We do get some unintentional humor in that episode with Cat Hands McGee in the, you know, 10 forward. So.
But to me, because I think in some ways, and maybe this is just me, we think of Q as a humorous character, but I mean, those Encounter, you know, to the extent it's serious. I mean, it is. Then you have Hide and Q, which is just stupid, but it's serious. And then you have Q who, again, obviously, as we say, you know, the Borg, and certainly people. There's a death count in that episode. But to me, Deja Q is that first time that we do a spin on that character and be like, but he's funny. We can do a whole funny episode. And then, you know, you go to Voyager and all that stuff, and it kind of continues that. He's always going to be the funny guy after that. But this sort of sets the tone for me.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting. Yeah, you're right. It's like Deja Q and Cupid kind of, I think that's what establishes the Q personality that Voyager picks up. And Tapestry, I guess, as well, right? Where he has that same kind of, aha, I'm teaching you a lesson, but I'm doing it while I'm waving my arms around acting like an idiot, you know? And
I have flowers for a Gene Luck Pickard.
I love Tapestry. I think that's right. Well,
it's
I mean,
forgotten Q episode, but it wasn't in the title.
And it's hard to say it's Q's best episode because he's also in All Good Things. But you know what I mean. It is like that's the part of the personality that Voyager picks up on, and runs with for better or for worse.
And also, Deja Q is the first time we see another Q, who also says, "Ugh." What an ugly color. Yeah, I know.
Who's also named Q.
Corbin. Yes, yeah, of course. It's Q. It's actually a really good cameo. Was that Corbin Benson? Is that his name? But that's from L.A. Law and Psych and all that stuff. But very random but cool cameo there. But, yeah, so that was good. So, you know, Daniel, you mentioned it. Cupid. another comedic episode. If you want to talk about fish out of water, we have the Enterprise crew out of the Enterprise. So Daniel, what's sort of your favorite comedic moments, laugh out loud moments, your LOL moments, if you will, from Cupid?
You know, it's a classic line. We all know it, right? Sir, I must protest. I am not a merry man. Like, it's, you know, I think they used that, if I remember correctly, I think they used that as a teaser for that episode. Like, Worf, you know, Worf had pretty much some of the best one-liners in the entire series. And that episode certainly is no exception. It's just a fun episode. It's a fun episode where it's not like the death of the Enterprise. It's, oh, Picard's one-time girlfriend might disappear or something, I guess. And, you know, and it's basically Q having fun with Picard, and it's just a lot of fun. It's the crew is like, what? You know, what the heck is going on? And I don't know. I love that episode. I think it's a super fun episode. And I sometimes tend to think it's a holodeck episode, but then I have to remember, no, this is actually all real. Everything that's going on is, well, quote-unquote, you know, as real as Q can make it.
I think it would be,
as you say, I've given it a life of its own.
I think it would even funnier if, I mean, you know, Robin Hood is fairly well known in our time, but this is the 24th century, if, like, no one remembered who Robin Hood was, and they're just like, what is going on? But, no, it's, I mean, you get Worf in, as, you know, Will Scarlet, which is funny because, you know, he's not named Will. But, you know, Data with his Friar Tuck hair, you know, it's...
And turkey leg.
Yeah, his giant mutton chop and, you know... Yeah, it'd be fun to, like, edit this footage together with, like, the adventures of Robin Hood and just... and, I mean, which is a...
BBC One presents...
the greatest fanfic ever written about Robin Hood. But no, it's just a really fun movie. And, you know... as they do try to use Vosh in other times, it which never kind of really sticks, but it was fun and you know, especially putting, you know, Picard out of water, because, you know, he doesn't want to be romantic in front of his crew. He doesn't want to pursue the girl, so all of that adds to, you know, him squirming around the entire episode, and it's just it's quite fun.
But Darren, Captain Picard is a very private person.
Well, I think the only way they could have topped it is having, you know, the other villainous roles be played by, like, Star Trek aliens. So you have, like, a Klingon Sheriff of Nottingham and a, you know, Romulan Prince John. I think that would have maybe too much. Maybe that should have stayed on the writing room floor. But
well, some
I do love when Worf takes Geordi's loot.
I'm like,
I think it's a great
scene. He's like, how many times can Star Trek do an Animal House reference? Oh gosh. Yeah, and you know, you talked about you know, Picard being out of water and the Q element, but, like, as you said, Darren, Vosh, I mean, she's another element that not Starfleet at all. And so she brings that other element to it of not predicting or not behaving predictably, of pulling the sword on Jean-Luc and of play acting with the sheriff and all that stuff, and or not the sheriff, but whatever the bad guy was.
Guy of Gisborne. Sort of
gives a very, that's right. Guy of Gisborne. Oh, that yeah. One.
it also, like, you know, that episode, like, kind of further solidifies Q and Picard's relationship. It's one of those first times, one of those times that we get this sense that Q is trying kind of to help Picard in a really, really roundabout way, in, like, the silliest way possible. But
I just now picturing that The More You Know star shooting across, and it's like Q's face superimposed over the star, and he's just smiling. But
is it that same way that he was in the cigar smoke?
Exactly. But no, it's a fun episode, and I totally agree with you, Daniel. It really starts to cement Picard and Q's relationship, which pays off later. I mean, that's why the scenes in, like, All Good Things resonate more, because by then Picard's not quite, like, you know, I think if the events of All Good Things had happened much sooner, Picard wouldn't have believed Q when he's like, I'm actually helping you. But because of episodes like this where we establish that as part of Q's character, we now, you know, we can believe that.
Well, I think Q's attitude toward Jean-Luc has always been like that of a master to a beloved pet. it's only an analogy, sir.
And then, and right then, we knew that Data would never become a commander.
Is that it? Is that the line? It's like that, and then like Worf saving Jadzia and getting someone killed. Those are the two things that will never get you to the captain. But yeah, like I think with Cupid, like those little moments of just like when Vosh walks, or no, when Beverly walks in. With Vosh and Jean-Luc having breakfast, and that look on Picard's face like, oh gosh, that's right, Beverly does come in during this time, and now I have to make introductions, and now this is Dr. Beverly Crusher, and this is one of the scientists who's in my quarters in the morning at 6 a.m. like you do.
Is it really 0600? I completely forgot. Computer, next time, remind me.
No, we were just talking about this brilliant archaeological
thing.
He's just looking at the first thing in his corner.
It's a lamp. did you just say
space
that
lamp.
Because you just looked at the lamp? No, it's totally what we're talking about. And that's how you work Anchorman reference into a Star Trek podcast.
Because, I mean, like I said at the beginning of the show, like, I mean, you know, TNG, especially the Picard character, but all of TNG, some people think of it as, I mean, which it is, maybe, this very serious show. But to have moments like this, I mean, do you think these are, like, just rare moments? Or do you think, I mean, like Daniel, do you just think, like, TNG is just really a heavy show and we just have these moments of comedy?
No, not at all, actually. When I saw that question, it was... To me, not at all. It totally fits within the character of the show. It's totally a part of the flavor of the show to be funny a lot of the times, to be lighthearted. I mean, as much as we get the Measure of a Man, Best of Both Worlds, you know, Sarek kind of heavy episodes, we have to contrast that with these fun episodes, you know, like Cupid or something like that, or even a Tapestry, which fills both of those roles, I think, really, really beautifully. And it's not against the tone of the show in my mind. In my mind, Star Trek can be just as funny as serious, and is all the better for it, I think. I love the comedic episodes because they, like you said, we're dealing with heavy subjects a lot of the time. We're thinking really deep about how we feel about things, and sometimes it's fun to just go out in space and have an adventure and not really have to think too much. So, and I think all incarnations do it very well, and TNG is no exception to that.
What about you,
Darren? Yeah, I think that's one of the geniuses of the Q character, especially in Cupid, because, you know, they don't have to spend a lot of time, like, setting up why this is happening. It's just, oh, Q did it. And it's like, okay. Yeah, and then they just accept it. I mean, if any other character of the week had shown up, we would have had to spend half the episode describing why that happened. But, no, I think Star Trek's a good balance in comedy. I'd say on a scale of, you know, the new Battlestar Galactica to on one end of the spectrum, and then you have something like Stargate SG-1 on the other end. I think Star Trek Next Generation is kind of right in the middle. Like, it's got...
I thought it was going to be like the old Battlestar.
Yeah, the old
Galactica.
Battlestar.
Like, that's really the spectrum, just Battlestar Galactica?
No, no. But no, I think, you know, shows like Stargate definitely don't take themselves nearly as serious as Star Trek does. In a good way. Like, they have their fun. They know how to do that. And when Star Trek does too, it's enjoyable. It never feels out of place. I don't feel... like, oh, where's the real Star Trek, like, when an episode like this comes along?
Well, speaking of comic characters, and we talked about Q, so then when I was making this list, there's only one other character that always brings the comedy, and that's Mrs. Troi.
Always.
Yes.
That's an interesting word to use for that.
Yes. Well, which is interesting, and we can talk about it, but, like, much like Q... she actually has half of her episodes are actually very serious.
Now, to be clear, which Mrs. Troi are we talking about? Is this ship crashing, Troy?
The one without a beer.
Or,
but the two episodes I had, the two Troy episodes, were Manhunt from season 2, episode 19, and Menage a Troy, another season 3, of course, episode 24. So, Daniel, since I did Darren last time. Loxana. So either those two episodes or any other moment, how does Loxana bring the funny for you? Or does she call you, you know, Doniel or something instead?
Yeah, she's a complicated character, probably worth talking about in depth at some point. But, I love Menage a Troy. I think it's a great episode. I think it's a fun episode. I actually just watched that episode today in preparation of this show here. And it's a lot of fun. And even in the bad episodes, like the first episode she's in from the first season, which I cannot remember.
Is that the one with the Haven, the toy you. Box, like gift box?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Man. Yes. Yep. Yep.
Congratulations on getting married. Box. Blah. Here's Shimmer.
Not Trek's finest hour.
No. But like that episode and the one after that she's in, which I can't remember. But I like her little banter with Picard. Their little flirtation's fun, and like even if she's surrounded by maybe not the greatest story or episode, she brings amusing elements most of the time. Except maybe like Dark Page when it's almost too dark to even enjoy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But she's a fun character most of the time, and even if not everything works for you in that episode that she's in, like you're at least gonna have a little bit of fun because you can tell she's having fun, and that really kind of elevates it for me. So,
well, of course, as I always have to bring up the early seasons, I think one of my favorite part with Manhunt, again, Troy, much like Q, and much like Vash, who we'll also talk about here in a second more, she's totally not Starfleet. She's totally not Starfleet. So she is not, you know, it has no, you know, rules or regulations tying her down. And so she likes to make Jean-Luc squirm, just like Q does, and just like Vash does, honestly. Maybe that's the theme here.
How do we make this a funny episode? Let's make Picard awkward.
Yeah. And so, you know, if you remember, you know, he's wearing his dress. I mean, excuse me, formal uniform. He's invited to her quarters, and you know, goes to Mr. Home and like, oh, when's everyone else coming? And you know, Mr. Home kind of looks at him and drinks his wine bottle.
This is the best
and
scene.
Then they're just squirming through that conversation, and then you know, Picard's like, oh, you know who would be an episode about that? Mr. Data, do you know anything about
call
this?
Call him Hutch,
and then just invite. But I mean, and then you know, her flirting and not knowing what the holodeck is, and having to flirt with the holodeck guy, and they're like, just give her a moment, it's fine. Rex, bartender, right? Anyway, so Darren, what do you think of Mrs. Troy?
No, I think you know she's a great character. I mean, Majel Roddenberry really. I'm glad that she got a role, you know, besides the computer, you know, because she's really a talented actress, and as difficult as people say, like, serious roles are, you know, funny roles are also, you know, pretty tricky to deliver, you know, consistently and not, you know, spiral into something that's just not funny. But she, you know, she has her moments, obviously, where she's serious and where she's, you know, being a mother. She could definitely give Beverly advice about being a mother. But that would be a fun episode.
If Beverly ever called Wesley little one.
I'm just now picturing, you know, it's like the workout day, and Crusher's there getting ready for worst calisthenic program, and Mrs. Troy, Loxana, comes in instead of Deanna, and like she just starts talking her ear off, and Beverly's just like, no, medical emergency to Dr. Crusher. But I really like her character.
Now, Darren, Loxana did give some parenting advice, but it was not to Beverly. It was to Mr. Woof.
Ugh,
one of Daniel's favorite episodes of when she took Alexander.
A mud bath is totally appropriate. No, it's not. No, it's not. Not in the slightest.
You have to laugh a little every day. I also have to, one of my, and it actually doesn't involve Loxana. It's actually when Troy and Riker are in the ready room with Picard. In Manhunt, I know I always push the early episodes, and Troy's explaining basically what am I supposed to call it? The Betazoid menopause, yeah. Basically. And Riker's like, yeah, Deanna, explain it to me. You know, sometimes the sex drive can go like 3 times, and Troy's like 10 times. Riker's like, what? And Troy's like, I didn't want to scare you off.
And Picard's just like, I don't want to be in this room right now.
It's another one of those awkward Tracker moments. Quick, Mr. Data, call me to the bridge. Oh, goodness. Yeah, and again, I just love, you know, that annoyance that Loxana brings, which I always think sometimes Deanna overreacts a little bit, but I get it, the whole kind of like, why aren't you married, you know, and that sort of does mother. Put a twist on the Troy, you know, like, because, I mean, Troy to a certain extent can be, Deanna can be kind of serious, a character, but to see her kind of squirm just like Picard under Loxana is pretty fun, like, you know, why haven't you married that Riker anyway? Why are you wasting that time? Like, yes, we're all wondering that.
Well, and has it ever been established, like, how old Betazoids live? I mean, she could be, like, in her teens, as far as we know. I mean, she probably doesn't live as much as Vulcans do, but I've never seen that written down.
Oh, goodness. Oh, well. Well, like I said, speaking of characters who make Jean-Luc squirm, and perhaps in more ways than one, Captain's Holiday... season 3, episode 19, introduces Vosh, and also introduces Rom, but that's neither here nor there, I suppose.
It's not Rom. It's, you know. I mean, it's the same actor, but it's not, you know.
Yeah, right. We heard your whole not Galron last week, Darren. Your excuses.
Look, that's not Tuvok taking over the Enterprise. I swear to you, that's totally a human.
Well, he died, so it can't
be.
He
came back as Tuvok.
Oh, like Vulcans have never died and come back before, Philip. Come on now.
He put his Katra in Picard's saddle on deck 12.
Yeah, remember. Oh,
no wonder he's so close to that thing, huh?
Now, Daniel, I know that I would never trust you to give me advice on Ryza, much like Riker. So what do you think of Captain's Holiday?
Oh, man. Speaking of which, I'm glad you mentioned that because I love that little bit that they have. When he gives him the Horgon. I love that. I think it's the best thing ever. See, this is like the little, like, even, you know, Captain's Holiday, which is kind of a lighter episode, but even in the heavier episodes, we get these little moments between the characters and stuff where they you know, they have fun with each other, and you can tell that they're kind of like a family unit thing. I mean, but Captain's Holiday is a great episode. Not really one that I normally think of as a comedic episode, though I guess it kind of is, because it's never really serious. It's not too heavy, and like you said, Rom is never a threat, so, you know.
But he wants so much gold. You
know, except for Cape... Useless gold, right?
Ha, ha, ha! You humans are so funny! Now, this is...
But it's a good episode.
This is one of the... And I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, because this is a pretty early episode, and I mean, in the grand scheme of things, where we start using Ferengi just strictly as, you know, comic relief. Like, you know, we tried the last outpost, we're sorry. And so now we know what to do with these guys.
From fur coats to Ferengi shorts, I think.
They just went right into that Metropolitan bus, ripped the fabric right off the chairs, and just plastered it right on his shirt.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I you're right. The Ferengi is wearing a Hawaiian shirt, isn't he?
he really is. Yeah.
Well, and I think one thing this episode shows us is not only does Jean-Luc like to sleep in certain clothing, he likes to party in certain clothing. Look, he's proud about his legs. That's all I'm gonna say. He was a runner in the academy. He has worked to tone those muscles, and he's going to show them off whenever he can.
You know, one thing, now that I'm actually thinking about it, that maybe bothers me a little bit here. First of all, we learned that Picard is quite the partier when he was in his youth. And he's been around the block in the Federation, you know, as far as that's concerned. He has never heard of Horgons before. He's never been to Ryza before. He's never heard of this
phenomenon.
Hey, when
you're busy ferrying delegates all around the Federation... You don't have a lot of time to go to Ryza.
I don't think there were any delegates on the Stargazer.
When
you
were
see that
busy
ship?
Yeah. Getting your ship lost to Ferengi. Yeah, no, I know what you
well,
mean.
You know,
it's like never
Ryza
heard being
is,
to Vegas.
Is,
I guess basically, Ryza's Vegas.
Exactly.
I mean, let's be
exactly.
honest.
Well, I think Risa is like the twerking of the 24th century. Picard's a little old for it. It has just come along. Like, it hasn't been established like how long Risa's been around.
No. He's saying Horgon's slang that the kids are saying nowadays that he just doesn't
exactly.
know.
Exactly. And of course, Riker's on Twitter. He knows all about it. Actually, I think Riker's on Snapchat. That's how this works.
I'm fairly sure we saw Horgons on Enterprise, so that is not actually a reasonable excuse.
Oh goodness, yeah. I think isn't that how the episode ends? And like with Picard going like, "Mr. Riker, we need to have a long talk
about your career, because that's where all our conversations."
Now I see why you haven't had any time for any development. Okay. There's actually another episode I just thought of, but I'm still going to go by the list, so too bad for me. My next episode is to actually go
I was wondering if we were going to make it past season three.
Early seasons, only early seasons. Anyway, is A Fistful of Data's season 6, episode 8, where Sheriff Worf and Deputy Alexander have to make the city safe.
And right there, you totally forgot the holodeck program... Didn't you? It's very forgettable.
You mean the ancient West? Darren, as a good parent quality time, how do you think of this?
Yeah, I didn't quite catch the lead-in you were guiding me to when we opened up the episode, so I totally went the Schisms route instead of the Fistful of Data's.
Look, however you parent, it's between you and Beverly. That's pretty much it.
But no, this is a fun episode, and it adds a bit. It's very much like Westworld, if either of you have seen that classic Yul Brynner movie. Basically, it's like a pleasure park where you can be in the wild, wild west, and you get to be the good guy, and you get to shoot people because everybody's robots. So, you know, but they eventually start remembering that you shoot them, and they revolt and kill everybody. But you get, you know, some High Noon aspects, you get, it's a Star Trek Western. It's, you know, not till that whatever episode, I can't remember the title of Enterprise, do we, you know, ever have, you know, Westerns in Star Trek.
Oh,
it's like
North Star.
North Star.
Yeah.
Homestar Runner?
Have
awesome.
A nice
well
glad
saved.
Of melonade. But,
oh, man.
Kids, ask your parents.
Awesome.
But I love Fistful of Data's. And, you know, yeah, you get, Worf pulling off the, the whole, what was it? Hid the, or no, I'm thinking Back to the Future 3 now. Never mind. But totally mixing up my Western parody.
And then the part where Data gets stuck into the past and we have to reboot him. Wait,
the time
no,
when Data has
zero.
To get up to 88 miles an hour and on the train. Wait, no. But no, this is a really fun episode. And it definitely is a good use of the holodeck. You know, yes, the holodeck, again, is trying to kill you. But through all that, they actually constructed a fairly good story around that. And we learn why you don't want to overclock your Data and just leave him at the factory default settings.
I enjoy the B plot, if you want to call it that, element of Data, you know, I mean, of course, they're still in the ship, but, you know, back on the ship.
Back outside the holodeck.
You know, turning Western. Yeah. And where he just, like, spits in the observation
lounge. My
favorite's
when he flips the tricorder and, like, puts it in his little holster and he's kind of like... sauntering down the corridor like he's got spurs on.
I said, "Sket, you varmint." What about you, Daniel? Which was your favorite Data character?
We get it, Brent. We know you want to do something.
This is like
else.
The culmination of
it.
Your favorite episodes. It's like Data praying. Every
oh yeah, right.
Even the the dancer at the bar at the end.
Oh, Mr. Chef. Yeah, it's okay. I assume when you say comedic episodes and you're talking about Fistful of Data's, we're talking about Marina Sirtis' hilarious attempt at some sort of a southern western accent because it's terrible, honestly. I don't blame her, actually. It was, they probably said go nuts because at that point, Brent was doing 12 different accents in that episode, so who cares, It's fun. It's a fun episode. I kind of hate the disparate parts of it, Alexander and broken down holodeck and But I don't hate the episode overall. Actually, I think it's a fairly fun, kind of decent episode. And it definitely has comedic moments. Of course, Worf is the king of comedy, I think, on TNG. So he's always doing something funny and getting
the original king of comedy.
He really is, yeah. He was doing that tour in the 90s.
Chancellor of comedy. Yeah. Sorry.
Well, like, I mean, I love the, you know, he in the first, like, bit where he's getting attacked and he, like, does, like, the Klingon moves and, like, takes out all the bad guys. And Alexander's like, no, you're not doing it right. He's like, what? Oh, okay, I see. I'm trying to see why you like this program.
The blood fever was about to grip him. He was almost about to kill Alexander in that moment.
If only.
Oh, yes. I mean, come on. You have Data in a dress on Worf's chest. I mean, that's how the holodeck program ends. Come on. Come on. No smiles.
It's almost like it was programmed by Barclay.
I have to give it for its title, though, too. It's like TNG's got some creative titles, and this was a pretty creative one.
I mean, it's no paintball episode, Daniel. I'll agree, but still.
If only.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Well, that's actually, I can think of some more, but I'm going to allow this to be a sort of a round robin part. So of basically, it doesn't have to be a favorite episode, or I mean, a comedic episode. It could just be a comedic moments in Trek. And I'll give you guys, you may guys already have one. I'll just throw out an episode and just say Rascals. I can't believe I didn't put Rascals on the list. Of course, it should be on there. So Darren, what a favorite?
I want to see my dad. Now. And don't get me started on the Frankie would not know the insideness of number one. Well, I'll just leave it there.
They saw the unaired pilot, The Cage. They know what it means. So, but Darren, any favorite comedic moments or laugh out loud TNG moments?
I think that's what's tricky about TNG, though, is because, I mean, there's great moments, but they're so interspersed. I mean, yes, you have your comedic, in quotes, you know, episodes like, you know, Fistful of Data's and, you know, Cupid, where they're very obviously trying to have a fun episode. But the best ones are, yeah, like you said, where, like, Worf just delivers the dry wit, you know, or Riker says something again, it's in, I know it's Rascals, but, like, when Riker, you know, has got the little Captain Picard doll and he's like, I'll be on the bridge. And, you know, it's just, it's the little things.
Oh, that's actually, oh lordy, when
oh no, you're right, that's Pegasus. Disaster. Or is that Pegasus?
It's Pegasus, because that's
Captain Picard thing.
Yeah.
Pegasus, you're right, that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, exactly. I mean, Pegasus, which we wouldn't count as a...
Not at all.
You know, comedy episode, but it's got this great, you know, and then Picard's conversation with the Admiral, where she's like, Captain Picard, eh? And he's like, oh, yes, I'm a role model.
I'm
she's
sure.
Like, I'm sure you are. I can't hang up on this interstellar call fast enough.
Sorry, Admiral, I'm going through a tunnel. Captain, I can see you right through the screen. You're just making a noise there.
Mr. DeForge, where's my static button I told you to install on this monitor?
Or it just turns into Galaxy Quest where he just, like, makes the signal and keeps on talking and they can hear him.
Oh, perhaps I'm not as stupid as I am ugly.
Well, since we voted that Galaxy Quest is one of the best Star Trek movies ever, does that count in our list? But that line in Pegasus, that's such a great scene, which, again, like, you know, kicks off this super serious, like, make the right choice Riker episode, but it's so fun.
Which follows through all the way into the 22nd century. So, yeah, it's a pretty important episode, I would say.
You said make the right choice. Is this a Spike Lee joint? Is that what this episode is? Do the right thing.
Get Picard. I should have told you the right thing the very beginning.
Okay. Now, Daniel, I'm waiting for you to say two words that will bring your love of comedy to Star Trek, and that is Mr. Tricorder.
No, I'm not going to bring that up. I was actually going to bring up Captain Picard Day. I'm glad that Darren mentioned it. But there are a few things that I always think of when I think of funny. And Darren also happened to mention Disaster. And Worf's fantastic delivery of Molly O'Brien in Disaster is one of the highlights for me. I think it's I cannot stop laughing every time I watch it. Because they, like,
you may,
like,
now give birth.
It's so cut in through the episode and so perfectly delivered. you know, he's like, I don't know what I'm doing. And like, yeah, and you may now give birth. Congratulations. Like, yeah,
the simulation was not this difficult. Well, I'm sorry.
It was much more orderly.
In fact, that episode has a lot of funny parts. The parts with Riker and Data are also pretty amusing. Like, what am I supposed to do with your head, Data? This is ridiculous.
Or Picard in the turbo lift with the kids. Yeah. Like, you know.
With crying kids. I mean,
yeah, it's disaster. Comedy. It's the movies. It's disaster, but yet it's got all these funny moments.
And really, one of the most classic things is also in one of the darkest episodes, to me, in season three, of course. We love season three here. In the season three episode, The Survivor. Survivor. When Worf says the famous line, good tea, nice house. Like, I love that line. It's so funny.
I just want to say, I'm now picturing like one of those realtor signs, like outside a property, like with a little arch, and it's just Worf, like kind of like a thumbs up, and he's just got a big old quote, like in a swirly font that says, "Good tea, nice house," and then it's got the sold sign on the top.
But you know, it's so true. Like Darren was just mentioning, like the thing about TNG is that it's the humor in it is it's such a part of the essential fabric and so interwoven that it's sometimes hard to remember it and think about it separate from the rest of these episodes. You wouldn't think, we already mentioned, like in Pegasus, that we have this great opening scene, this fantastic, fun, silly opening scene, but we do because it fits. Even though it's a totally disparate situation, it just fits these characters that most of the time they're having fun. And you know, there's probably 10 other instances I could think of, but those were the two that I really wanted to bring up.
Now, I know one of your favorite episodes, Daniel, is Data's Day, and so I'm currently thinking of the Data Learns to Dance scene with Beverly. And she's like, oh, what, you wanted that kind of dance? Oh, okay. She's like, so. Or Data just tap dancing.
Or again, this, you know, just talking about it, like, mm-hmm. Think of The Offspring, which is a super serious episode, but then we have Data's offspring making out with Riker in that one scene at the bar, and it's so fun and so funny and so much, you know what I mean? It's just these moments are just part of the fabric of the show, I think.
And I think you could just do a whole episode just on funny Data moments, because I think one that always sticks in my mind is I think it's from The Defector, which again that's another serious episode. I believe it's from this episode where LaForge is like, you know, is it telling the truth, or you know, the Romulans could catch us with our pants down, and Data's like, pants down.
We should ignite the Midnight Petroleum. Yeah, no, Data brings the funny.
He does.
But sometimes he tries too hard. Like the episode where he's, you know, trying to learn comedy from the Jerry Lewis impersonator.
Oh,
it's funny, but it's so forced. Like it, and again, like, yeah, it's funnier later when Guinan's like, you know, that was funny because of what you said. Like, not all the stupid jokes you tried to tell, you know. It's just like Star Trek. If you try too hard, it doesn't work.
Well, and you know, not to ignore the movies, I think probably one of the funniest scenes, I would say top 10, has to be Troy in First Contact. I had to drink 6 glasses of something cold.
Yeah, tequila.
He didn't even talk with me.
It's the one we were looking for.
I had to get his bloody hands off
Don't
me.
Don't you go patronizing my counseling.
It's a primitive culture. I'm really trying to blend in. You're blended all right.
Or in that movie where Geordi's talking to Barclay, and he's like, you told him about the statue? Or he's like, or even Geordi, he's like, you're kind of standing there with your arm stretched out and you're looking out to the horizon.
I probably shouldn't tell you this.
I gotta take a leak.
I went to Zed from Cochrane High School.
Oh, yeah, you shouldn't have told me that.
You know what? I'll spread the love here, and I'll say 99% of the humor that is attempted in Generations is forced and is not funny. But I absolutely love every time I watch it, the life form song that Data says when he's at the console. I can't stand Mr. Tricorder. I think that's obnoxious and annoying. Or his profanity when the ship's about to crash is also pretty funny.
Well, I also like in the TOS time where Scotty's like, "Is something wrong with your chair?" it's the subtleties. Subtle comedy's way better than like I'm telling you a joke now.
It is. It is green. Oh goodness.
Ah, relics.
It's been fun talking about comedic episodes today, but this is just one of the many Trek topics we've been talking about here on the network this week. Here's a quick look at what else you may have missed here on Trek.fm.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Because it's actually legitimately trying to say something.
Yes, very Star Trek. It may be the most Star Trek of all Star Trek.
Yeah, it's definitely what I would point to as being, this is what science fiction is about.
Earl Grey.
Kovac will tell us to experience Bij sometimes, in which case we will draw the Bij card, Klingon word for pain.
Is it our birthday?
It is. It's going to be a lot of fun.
To the journey!
That's the one thing we could take from Homecoming is, like, paragraph one, Chakotay and Seven break up. That's for real.
Yeah, they shake hands and go, hey, it's been fun. It's been nice. Thanks for the picnic.
See ya.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
At this point, like, they could say, yeah, why not? Star Wars crossover. I would essentially say, fine. Both franchises are dead. Let's just sew them together and see what happens.
Melodic Treks.
One of the most well-thought-out alien races that you only see in one episode.
Yeah, and the music is it's menacing without being over menacing, if that makes sense.
Axanar, the official podcast.
I think Justin Lin is a fascinating choice to direct because the Fast and the Furious movies, even though, they're action, adventure, road race movies, are really about a family.
The 602 Club.
That's really cool, though. I mean, I think that is a fantastic way to get to see just about any movie is kind of being able to watch it through a kid's eyes.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So you can check out all these shows and get in on the Daily Trek Talk. You'll find them in iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, the Windows Podcast Directory for Xbox and Zune, or you can stream from the website. Basically, you can find them anywhere. Just visit trek.fm/pd for podcast directory to get all the links. And if you would like to contact us to share your thoughts on today's show, just go to trek.fm/contact. From there, choose send to show, and of course, select Earl Grey. These messages will be emailed to the three of us personally. Finally, in social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under username trekfm. Our new listener discussion group is called the Babel Conference, found by typing the Babel Conference, of course, in the Facebook search field, so you can find us there. Please support our sponsor, Audible.com, who helps us bring Earl Grey to you each week. Audible is a great way for you to read all of the books you've always wanted to read, but never thought you'd have time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, and even some of the most famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive, Federation, and Spock's World, Audible has something for everyone. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice, along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. So give it a try today, catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read, and that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting Earl Grey and all of Trek FM. And lastly, there's one more way you can directly help us keep Earl Grey coming to you each week, and that is through becoming a patron of Trek FM. By visiting www.patreon.com/trekfm, you can choose among various pledge levels and receive rewards for becoming a Trek FM patron. These rewards let you inside the observation lounge of our network and make it possible for us to distribute all of our great content. So please become a Trek FM patron and visit www.patreon.com/trekfm today. If you have any ideas for future shows or content ideas, you can contact our associate producer, Will Nguyen. You can find him on Twitter at @Will_Nguyen and, of course, in the Babel Conference. He's also an associate producer for The Orb and Literary Treks and is Trek FM's content coordinator.
All right, guys, we got something out of the old subspace mailbag here. So this is from Mike H. Because I feel like I'll mispronounce his last name if I say it. He is from Bentonville, Arkansas. So, Mike, we appreciate it. And he says to us, he says, "What am I going to do now? I've caught up on all your previous episodes, except the one about Ship of the Line, which I haven't read yet, so spoilers. And now have to wait a week for the next one. You guys have a great show. Hope Warp 5 is as binge-worthy," and we think it is, all about Enterprise, with Norm over there, and Happy New Year. So Mike, we appreciate the feedback. We like to start off 2015 with great comments from listeners like you, so we certainly appreciate it. All right, Daniel, if folks want to get advice for comedians to choose from the holodeck and learn how to be, you know, funny, where can they find you on the Twitterverse?
Well, if they need to know how to be funny, they can definitely come to me, and they can find me at 1UpDan. That is the number one, not the word.
That's funny.
See, Darren knows. Darren knows, too.
And Darren, if they want to find out why you're the number one dad, where can they reach you on Twitter?
Oh, you're just assuming I have a Twitter account. Fine. Okay, I get it. Where can they find you
on Snapchat?
Oh dear God!
Because you're a dad, you don't have one. Aha!
That's at Mudbath Dad on Snapchat. So,
but yes, they can find me on Twitter under username Dr. Sci-Fi. It's DrSciFi.
All right, and if folks want to talk about their favorite comedic moments on TNG, and I don't know, I guess maybe other Star Trek, whatever, they can reach me on Twitter. My handle is NC Public Servant. That's NC for nothing but comedy, folks. All right, guys. It's been great. But I got this wedding invitation from Loxana. So I'll be in the gym. Until next week, make it so.
Live long and prosper.
Endgame.
Fire.